Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Do you know that there's a direct connection between the quality of sleep and the quality of your health, and that sleep deprivation can be hazardous to your overall well-being? Do you know that the lack of sleep can contribute to weight gain, thyroid problems, and even fibromyalgia? Do you know that sleep is a natural stress reducer? Thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic of today's show is one that I'm sure most of us right now at this time of the year, being as hectic as it is, can really relate to, and that is, how can I ever get enough sleep while I'm trying to get everything else done? It is the season for lack of sleep and sleep deprivation. In fact, I was just, before I came on the show, just saying there is a cosmic sense of humor. I have been traveling and got home at about 3:30 in the morning California time, Pacific time, and here I am doing a show on sleep, the natural stress reducer. There is a cosmic sense of humor. So we will all chuckle about that, and I will try to stay awake through the show and be able to share more about what you can do to get enough sleep. I'm also going to be sharing my medical intuitive skills with you, so if you have a question for me about sleep or about your health, I invite you to call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada, and the same number for international callers. The only difference is, of course, dialing your international calling code. Well, sleep is actually essential to the human body, and really, in reality, we need at least 7 hours for it to be able to really get rid of the daily buildup of stress toxins that we incur over the course of a day period of time. Now, stress doesn't always have to be negative stress. It can be positive stress. The reality is the body reacts to it chemically and electrochemically the exact same way. So we really need that good 7 hours of quality sleep to be able to get rid of those stress toxins. Also to allow the body to be able to rebuild the tissue the way it needs to regenerate itself via the cells that it's producing, and then also to stabilize all the bodily functions. So if we were able to really get at least those 7 hours, it can go in and really help us fully recover from the 16 hours that most of us are spending being awake. When I go in and I'm talking about sleep, it reminded me that I have on my website, www.Reitberger, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R.com, I actually have done a Your Health teleclass on insomnia. So if you're interested in learning more about insomnia and then also some alternative processes that you can use, I have a laundry list of the things that you can do in your bedroom before you go to sleep and so forth to be able to help you with your quality sleep. Because what I have found over the course of doing this work as a medical intuitive is that when we talk sleep, we're really talking about the quality of sleep. And for example, myself, I sleep maybe 45 minutes an hour at a time, and then I wake up and then I have to go back into the sleep process. So I really don't get into that real deep quality REM sleep that we're talking about. So if you go to my website, www.reitberger.com, I have an audio download of the insomnia teleclass and then also a PDF download that you can print out and then keep in your binder or for your records and reference for future use and everything. There's even a try before you buy feature on all of my different topics that I've covered as far as illnesses. As a medical intuitive, of course, I always look at it from a clinical perspective, a general description, also the psychological components. How does it affect the aura? How can you see sleep deprivation in the aura? Even if you can't see it, I go in and talk about what it feels like in the auras, how it drains us of energy, and where we can actually find the origin site of sleep problems themselves. And then I go in and look at how it maps in the chakra system for all of you who work with chakras, chakra balancing. That's always valuable information. And then I go in and look at the role your personality plays in why some personalities actually need less sleep as far as the mental activity, but as a result needs more quality of sleep as a result of that mental activity. And then, of course, like I said, lots of alternative choices that you can use to be able to help you with the reestablishing sleep cycles, getting quality of sleep, and so forth. So just go to my website, www.reitberger.com. run your cursor over teleclass. A menu will drop down of archives. Just click on that. It'll take you right there to the page where you'll be able to try before you buy Insomnia. So it's something that you might want to look at, especially with this time of the season. One of the things that I did when I was researching, I came across one of the largest research studies on sleep that was ever published by, and it was published in the archives of General Psychiatry. The purpose of this study was specifically to determine if there's a connection between sleep duration and mortality. The findings show that the human body needs between 7 and 8 hours of sleep a night, and that too little sleep, such as 4 or 5 hours, or too much sleep, as really even 9 to 10 hours, have more of a negative impact on the body and actually can increase the risk of developing major illnesses over the course of time. Now, when this study was taking place and I did the research on it, this didn't necessarily take into consideration the fact that maybe your body happens to be a body that needs 10 hours of sleep. So where it would say in the study that was 7 to 8 hours, maybe yours is 10 hours and 12 is too much, or even 7 is too little. So you really have to know your body. But one of the things that it did find consistently over the course of the thousands of people, it was a huge research study that took in thousands of people and monitoring the activities of the body over a long period of time, they actually found that it does have an impact on not only major illness, but also affecting longevity. However, in the United States, fewer than 40% of Americans say that they get fewer than 8 hours of sleep. This means that we're all racking up what I call a sleep debt that accumulates within about full 2 weeks a year. And what that means is that we really, if we're 40%, and when I was looking at this research, that was actually a study that was done in 2008. We hit the holidays. We hit the time now with all the press and everything. Then we have all the technology where people are online many times 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning and so forth. I'm sure that that percentage is actually increased. So what we do is that the more that we go into that sleep debt, it actually accumulates and it robs the body of actual time that it's able to be able to heal itself, stabilize itself. So that accumulates to where it actually shortens the life cycle by so many weeks, or in some cases, even years. Researchers have even come up with the name of the sleep debt. It's called VCSD. Or volitional chronic sleep deprivation. And what they've done in this study is they really don't look at it as just a once in a while thing. They really look at it as a lifestyle disorder. And the reality is, because they did qualify it and categorize it as a lifestyle disorder, then what we can do is we can look at changing our lifestyle to where we can actually impact the quality of our health and add longevity to our life by getting just the quality of sleep that we need and the number of hours we sleep. Without enough sleep, the cost is reduced in memory, focus, concentration, and the reaction time that we need both from our motor skills and cognitively to be able to function on a daily basis begins to decline significantly. However, it's only been in the last 6 years that we're really learning the connection between chronic sleep deprivation and serious health consequences. One of the serious health consequences of sleep deprivation are autoimmune diseases and disorders. And as a result, we're seeing an increase of those. In fact, a research study that I went in and looked at said that Americans get less sleep than any other culture in the United States. We have truly become a society of workaholics. We know that sleep is essential for workings of every organ and gland in the body, and that sleep and its health connection starts in the brain's central command post. Actually, it's the hypothalamus, because that's the command post that activates or inhibits hormone production. It's also the command post that sends the messages to go to bed, wake up, adjust the body's temperature, affects blood pressure, monitors the digestive secretions, and then, as I mentioned, oversees the immune system activity. Inadequate sleep also works on hormone production in other areas as well. Without enough sleep, the central nervous system becomes overactive. It inhibits the pancreas' ability to produce the sufficient amount of insulin, and which is the hormone that's needed to digest glucose. In fact, a study conducted at the University of Chicago showed that just six days of 4 hours sleep, 11 young healthy volunteers were pushed into a pre-diabetic state and that their cortisol levels had elevated significantly. What we know is that the lack of sleep increases the cortisol, and a lot of the belly fat that many of us carry actually is the result of high levels of cortisol for a prolonged period of time, and then also is now being tied scientifically to the sleep deprivation. And part of the reason for that is during sleep, again, the body detoxifies, and one of the elements that it detoxifies is cortisol. And without the adequate amount of sleep, then what we have is the buildup of cortisol. So a lot of the weight that we carry has to do with cortisol, sleep, and sleep deprivation. I'm going to be talking more about this. I just wanted to start out the show by giving you some research information so we could establish the fact that we all do need to have a quality sleep cycle on a nightly basis. And one of the things is also that I'm going to be talking about in the next segment is that while we can sleep in longer in the weekends and try to make up for the sleep deprivation, it does help, but it really doesn't go in and look at the lifestyle changes that we need. The body really needs to be able to go to sleep on a predictable time frame. That's what we used to do as children when our parents would put us to bed at a predictable time. Our circadian rhythm would establish itself. We would get up at a predictable time, and we were actually able to fight off a lot of the viral infections, the flu and the cold specifically, because our immune systems were being able to function properly because we were getting enough sleep. So when we go in and we look at colds, flu, we also have to go in, look at the weakening of the immune system, and again, come back to sleep. So as we enter these holidays times, it's really important that get up and you can run as much as you need to during the day, but we really do need to go to sleep and get up at a certain time. I want to jump right in and take calls now. Hi, Elizabeth from Florida. How can I help you, honey?
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, thank you. This is exciting.
Oh, my pleasure.
First of all, I do want to make an appointment for a full reading, but I'm waiting for that to open up on your website.
It's going to be posted later on today, so check in probably later on, early evening. Let's see. Oh, that'll be in the middle of the night. It should be posted later on today. So good. I'd love to have you have a reading with me, sweetie. Okay, so what can I do right now?
Well, the question I gave him was about my feet. I have, in my right foot, I have a lump in the arch. It feels as if it might be on a ligament or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure. I've had so much damage. I'm sure if you go into my foot, that poor little distorted.
Yeah, it has.
Smell.
Yeah.
And there's something in the left foot, too, that when I put on certain shoes, I have this incredibly deep itching that will go on for days after wearing maybe a certain pair of flip-flops or something. I don't know if it's tied to the materials or the heat or there's a fungus infection or what. Just a couple of foot things that are...
Okay, let's go in and... it's going to sound strange. I'll go back to your feet, but I want to go to your lower back, your sacroiliac joint.
Okay.
And I want to connect what's going on with your feet as to why you get the discomfort in that pelvic girdle area. When your ankles become fixed or tight, the Achilles tendon, the plantar ligaments in the bottom of the foot, it actually inhibits the mobility of the ankle itself and the movement of the muscles. Whenever you get any tightness in your ankles or your Achilles tendon, hun, it's going to radiate up into your lower back. So an important thing that you can do that will help you with your your feet in particular, is that when you're just sitting, do the alphabet. Start with one foot and go through the entire alphabet by pointing your toes, the A, B, all the way to Z and so forth. And then what you'll do is you will actually be stretching those ligaments, and you'll be moving those ankle tendons, the Achilles tendons and those ankle muscles. And that's going to take a lot of the pressure off of the base of your foot in the plantar ligaments itself. When I go into the right foot, as I go into the heel, the sciatic nerve actually splits, and it goes to the big toe and it goes to the little toe. And then, of course, we have the peripheral nerves that are in that area as well. When I go in to the right foot, you have micro tears both in the plantar ligament closest to the inner arch of your foot, and then also in the metatarsal, the outer part of the foot as well. So you actually have micro tears, and in those tears you have some calcification, and that's what's causing this sense that you don't have this elasticity and the mobility with it. When I go into the right foot, I had to go in, but actually was kind of stalling while I was going through that. It was important that I did it, but I really needed to go in because I wanted to be sure that what we're dealing with isn't a neuroma. And it feels like it actually is a neuroma, that is, they're like little, bulges, like little, benign tumors per se. That's the best way for me to be able to describe them, that actually will, in an area that has been injured, will actually the nerves themselves get this little kind of like a bubble on it. And what that can do is any pressure on that can cause any discomfort. It can cause an itching to occur. It can cause you to change the way that you actually hold your foot down and so forth. And one of the things that a lot of podiatrists would want to go in and remove the neuroma, I would encourage you to just kind of monitor it. There's some things I'm going to suggest. An ionic foot bath would be very good for you for both of your feet. If you don't want to invest the money, then what you'll want to do is find a spa that has the ionic foot baths. It pulls the toxins out through the bottom of the feet. It will help remove a lot of the toxin in that connective tissue around the neuroma. It also will, you could use a castor oil pack. Edgar Cayce was a firm believer of that. That will take away the inflammation that is around it. The thing that the neuroma itself is not big. So looking at surgery or anything like that just doesn't make any sense, frankly. I'm not supposed to do that as a medical intuitive, but really it does not make any sense for you to go in and to have someone go in and start messing around with the nerves that way. But my sense is if you could use the castor oil packs, the ionic foot baths, you might also want to look at taking some Epsom salt soakings with your feet. You might want to look at doing some mustard baths. All of those things are going to remove the toxins out through the pores of the skin, and it'll take the inflammation off of this area. The other thing that you can do is flip-flops, honestly, sweetie, ought to be out of your repertoire of the shoes that you wear. And the reason for that, because you have the micro tears specifically in the right foot, what they're going to do is every time you don't have the arch support you need, it causes those ligaments to have to stretch. And then what that does is it creates an inflammation in the micro tears. And that's what causes a lot of the discomfort as well. So what you might want to do, there are actually some flip-flops that have good arch supports. You might want to look into those. You will want to start finding some slippers that have some arch support in them, maybe some quality sandals. There's Anatech, A-N-A-T-E-C. I normally don't talk about different products, and for all of you that are listening, I don't get any kind of compensation, but they are really good sandals that have a good arch support. They have a nice bottom to them, and they could help you as well. Staying off of your feet as far as barefoot would be able to help you that way. So I would look at it from that standpoint and see if we can get the arch support. You might want some gel orthotics or something. It doesn't really even feel like you need orthotics at this time. You just need to be able to protect those ligaments to where they don't get hyperextended. That puts tension in the Achilles tendon. That goes up the back of the leg, up the back of the hamstring, up and attaches to those little mastoid muscles in the pelvic girdle itself. And then we have your off balance. So you might want to try those. The left foot, the primary issue with the left foot is it's been trying to compensate that sciatic area of the, sacroiliac joint. There, I knew I'd get it. It's been trying to compensate for what's been going on the right foot. So your left foot's been carrying a lot of the pressure. And as a result, it's changed your walking gait. And if you can get the inflammation out of the right foot and work with that, soak the left foot, do some stretches, those little ABCs and so forth, keep those ankles limber and so forth, that's going to help you tremendously. And then again, you need good arch support on the left foot. It just needs a little help because it's been carrying you for a long time.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. And now I'm going to take one more direction. Okay. This is the woo-woo part of Carol.
Good. I love the woo-woo.
Yeah, the knees. We have two major chakras in the knees that most people don't talk about. Those chakras, really, if we were to look at ourselves as the tree of life, they are really the chakras that are the trunk of our lower torso that holds our upper body upright and straight. And those knees, they're tied to abandonment. But they're not tied to the abandonment that is associated with people in our lives. They're tied to the beliefs that we perceive about ourselves, that maybe we haven't followed our dreams. Maybe we've abandoned our spiritual work. Maybe we're not doing what we need to. Maybe we're stuck. All of those different metaphors that we use with ourselves. The right knee is tied to the part of the brain that you hold all of your history about all of the things you've wanted to do in your life, honey, that you haven't done, that makes you feel stuck. That metaphor I give to you in that right knee, because I'm going to go to your left knee, which is the soul chakra, and your left knee is always yelling at the right knee, you're not stuck. You're just stuck in old thoughts. You've always followed your dreams. You just haven't done it consciously. If you could shift and follow your dreams consciously, and the reason I keep saying that like a broken record is there's something, honey, you've been wanting to do the last 3 years that is like a pot boiling on the back burner. It wants to be expressed. It's a creative outlet. It feels like it has to do with voice and words and speaking and writing and sharing your talents and so forth.
Yeah.
Your soul is going, just get the block out of the right knee. We are not self-abandoning ourselves. We just need to step forward, put it down on paper, get a journal, get a tablet, get something, and just start putting it out there. And energetically, that chi will start running through that right knee. It'll run through the left knee. Your sacroiliac joint's going to set itself. Your whole spine's going to be upright. Your feet aren't going to be in trouble. And you are going to be walking your talk, sweetie.
It's a book, I think.
It is a book. You are so right.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. One little piece.
I wrote a page.
Good girl. So, you know, I can relate to that because, you know, we get busy, blah, 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 all the things that we do, all the things we say and everything. Even if it's a half hour a day, honey, if you can stay with that flow of consistency, even if it's a paragraph right now, do it. And then it'll start to take on a momentum. The issue with the book right now is that you feel like you have a direction that you want it to go, and it's just waiting for you to get into the groove, put the words down on paper, and then almost like magic, honey, it's going to take on a life of its own. That's the romantic part of being a writer. It takes on a life of its own, and then all of a sudden, all you do is just let the words flow, and then your book is a reflection of your soul, your purpose, your intentions. Then it's magic, and that's all we need is a half hour a day just to get it going. It will do so much energetic clearing, and then I can see the feed and your whole thing. It's like, whoa, now you're upright.
I had no idea why I was asking about feed.
You know, the soul goes, I don't know, Carol, she's not going to listen that direction. So let's start physical and let's come in the back door. I love soul. It just does that all the time. All right, sweetie, try those things. I think they'll help your feet tremendously. And again, I think that what we're dealing with is something that's very, very manageable. And once we get the inflammation, it'll basically take care of itself.
Fabulous. Thank you so
All
much.
Right. My pleasure. Thank you so much. Okay, Billy, let's go ahead and we'll jump into a quick break. I'm going to be right back, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more about the Sleep Health Connection. Stay tuned.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Well, welcome back. And if you're just joining me, I'm talking about the importance of sleep and how it's a natural stress reducer. I'm also taking your calls. If you have a question for me about the topic today of sleep or about your health, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number's good in the U.S. and Canada, and also for international callers. You know, I'm talking about sleep and talking about the importance of it, but also in my background with personality behavioral psychology, I also want you to know that your personality really does have an impact on your daily activities, how you run your body, your lifestyle, and really can affect sleep as well. So if you're interested in learning more about the role your personality has in your health, I have a couple of really good books that I encourage you to purchase. They're great books for the holidays. They're gifts that you can give to other people. And the reason that they're such great gifts isn't because, of course, I wrote them, but it's because of the fact that they can help someone really understand who they are and why they do the things they do. And I know when I wrote the books, I always thought I was writing books for everyone else, and I found out that I was really writing books for myself. So the two books that actually have personality assessments in them that really are tied to health is Your Personality, Your Health, and What Color Is Your Personality. Both of the books are available through hayhouse.com or amazon.com. They're a fun way for us to be able to look at ourselves. It's a non-threatening way where we don't actually label ourselves. We just look at ourselves from the perspective of color, which is the common language. So again, learn more about yourself, learn more about how you think, how you act, and that really is what determines why you do the things you do, the lifestyle that you have, the tasks that you're drawn to, the words you use to communicate, and then also whether you have issues with time, meaning that you always seem to be chronically late. It's just a personality thing. Other people may chastise you, but the reality is, for the green personality in particular, time isn't always time to get somewhere. It's the time to begin something, unless, of course, it's important for them to be punctual. And then there's a red personality that was born with a clock buried in every cell of their body, and they live their life by the clock. So interesting information, but you can actually go in and find the connection of your personality to your health. All right, so I want to go in. I'm going to finish up the segment today talking about some of the different symptoms and some of the things that we can do to actually increase our sleep quality, and then also some of the symptoms of sleep deprivation and so forth. But I want to jump in because I've got a lot of callers. I'd like to take Joellen from Chicago. Hi, Joellen.
Well, hi. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for calling me.
Well, listen, I have a question that it does have to relate to sleeping, because what I've done or what I've discovered is EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. Are you familiar with it?
I am, very much so.
And it's the tapping, and there was one of them that I have come across, and it's supposedly supposed to help you sleep and feel more revived. Is it effective, or is it just a psychological thing, or do you agree with it, or should I just go to sleep normally?
No, actually, it's a very effective technique, because what it does is in the tapping area, you're actually tapping meridians in the body that sometimes the chi doesn't flow as freely as it needs to, and just the tapping removes any kind of energy buildup or blockages or congestion or anything that we have, and it causes the chi to flow freely. Also, in the areas that we have for the different tapping for the EFT techniques and so forth, T-beam techniques, then what it does is it actually goes in. We store emotions in those different areas of the body. So the emotional aspect of it, the emotional freedom, is not only does it free up the chi to run through the body the way it needs to, then what it also does is it frees up the congestion that we have around specific emotions. And those emotions are emotions that seem to be our kind of what I call the emotions of choice. Some people it may be guilt, some people it may be sadness, some people it may be disappointment, some people it may be anger. So the EFT technique actually goes through and addresses those non-visible emotional charges that we have that are chronic, meaning that they're predictable. There are emotions of choice, and they actually free it up. So if it's working for you, absolutely stay with it. It's a technique that doesn't always work for everyone. And part of the reason for that is some people have to think it too hard by personality. And as a result, they are trying to figure out exactly what it does, how it does it, when it does it, when should they do it, what should they get the outcome, where is it going to go from here. And as a result, all it does is that it does get the chi flowing, but it really can't go in and do the deep emotional release work that it's really designed to do. So it's a very powerful, very effective, different technique. And if it works for you, sweetie, by all means. The other thing I can tell you, when you're doing the EFT, are you doing your thymus, are you doing in your chest area, sweetie?
Yes. The head, and then the eyebrows, and then, all of the different parts.
Good. And what that's... Yep. What that's doing is it's basically when you tap the chest area, the thymus gland that you're tapping to is tied to the pineal gland. And the pineal gland is where we have the melatonin. And that's where our circadian rhythm is actually monitored and really is set. So when you tap there, what you're doing is you're in that tapping, you're actually talking to the pineal gland. Pineal gland is part of the stress reaction that we have in the body. So when you tap in the chest, then it's talking to the pineal gland. When you tap in the face area, in the brow area, what you're doing is you're actually stimulating the cranial nerves. That's taking the pressure off the cranial nerves. There's 12 in the head itself. It causes a cerebral spinal fluid to be able to balance itself. Kind of the brain drops into the skull the way that it's designed. We get our head on straight, literally. And uh-huh. Then what it does is it takes pressure off of the back of the neck, pressure off the trapezius muscles. And then what we do is we're much more relaxed. And then when we go to sleep, we can go into that deeper quality of sleep. So it works well.
Yeah. Well, I do have a question about my left breast. It felt like I had like a little bruise there. It's been really kind of tender these past few days.
Okay. There are two areas that I can pick up the tenderness in the breast itself. One is just underneath the arm itself toward the front of the breast itself. That seems to be a spot that, as most females, we have a soreness to it. Then I can go on the left breast down lower on the left breast, probably about 3 o'clock from the nipple itself. Let's see, 3 o'clock. And you've got a little bit of a sore spot there. You actually feel like you're going through some changes, sweetie. May I ask your age?
43.
Yeah, you're going through some changes. Your progesterone, when you go through any kind of cycling, the progesterone feels like it becomes elevated. And I'm not sure that the tenderness that you're picking up and it doesn't have to do with more of a dominance of progesterone, which can cause sore spots in the breast itself. If it's something you're concerned about and it doesn't wane after you kind of go through your cycle, then what you might want to do is you might want to go and see someone. There may be a little bit of a fibroid that I'm picking up in that area that actually is what I call fluid base or gelatinous that fills up when there's around the cycle, and that could be causing some of the tenderness as well. So you could do castor oil packs. You could do some Tramiel, T-R-A-U-M-E-E-L. And then what that'll do is that'll help with some of the inflammation, but it feels like it's a more cyclic than anything else, sweetie.
Okay. All right.
So, well, yeah, just keep an eye on it and then try some of those things. And then you might also want to put on a calendar if you notice that you have this reoccurrence of it, if it's tied anywhere to the menses cycle itself.
Okay. Well, good.
Okay. Thank you so much. And you have a wonderful day. Hi,
Kathy. I love yourself.
Thank you, sweetie. Hi, Kathy from New York. How can I help you, honey?
Hello.
Hi. How can I help you, sweetie?
I was wondering if you can see, I've had melanoma cancer in my face, and they took it out, but it still feels sore and numb, and I'm just wondering if any is coming back, right side of my face.
Yep, I'm going in with that. Actually, what I'm doing is I'm going in and I'm doing a whole scan of your body because I want to be sure when I answer the question that I can answer it the way that it needs. The numbness, sweetie, is tied to the small peripheral nerves that were actually impacted in the skin itself with the removal. So the numbness itself is an outcome of the removal process itself. Some of the area, when I go in and look at the area, is the numbness, honey, more on the lower part than the upper, where it was removed?
Yeah, it's right under the right eye.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, thank you. I just needed to, again, this gets a little bit delicate when I go in and do that. In that particular area, my sense is that it will take you longer to get sensation back in that area than in other parts around where it was removed. And the reason for that is that's where the real depth of it was, and they had to go in deeper. And it almost feels like they had to go in like it had a little root almost attached to it. So that will come back, but it's going to take a little bit longer. Okay, so going in, there's an area that I would like you to watch. My sense is that it was all removed. And the reason you're hearing hesitancy is that when I go to the right outside of where it was removed, I can pick up some activity. I don't think it's really cancer. I'm just going to put myself out there. I don't think that it's cancer, but there's a part of it that feels like it still has some activity attached to it. So if you, are you due to go back for another checkup, sweetie?
Yes, in January.
Okay. Would you ask the doctor to please go in and check all around the rim itself, and to get the feedback as to whether, is it a he? It feels like a he, doctor.
Yes.
Okay, masculine. Ask him if he got all of it. And again, my sense is that we don't really have cancer present there, but I do have some cell activity that I would be remiss if I didn't at least bring an awareness to it, for you to have him check all around the edge and be sure, because that area that I'm picking up as I'm touching it, and I'm going to go to the outside right part of it, I'm going to go up kind of to the top, not at 12 o'clock, but probably more between 10 and 11 o'clock. I still have some activity there. And when I can actually go in and be empathic and touch it, it has some sensitivity there. And I would just have the doctor look at it.
Okay.
And that's basically everything else that I'm picking up. I went in and did a body scan and so forth, did not pick up anything else in the body scan, didn't pick up any placement of cancer anywhere around where the melanoma was that was removed. I would encourage you to continue to support your immune system just because of the healing that your body's been going through. But I would just have him check that outer peripheral aspect of it and then just be sure that he got it all. And if for any reason he needs to go in and he has any kind of concern or you have a concern and he does a little small biopsy area there, then he'll send it to pathology and then you'll get the answer that you're looking for. It doesn't feel like anything, but I do get the energetics still there, sweetie.
Okay, great. Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Well, what I want to do is I want to jump in. I still have a couple of callers. I'm going to do my darndest to get back to you. But one of the things that I wanted to bring out so we can kind of understand some of the symptomology that goes along with how do we find out? I have this people ask me this all the time. Carol, how do I find out if I'm really dealing with just a lack of sleep or actually what's considered sleep deprivation? One of the things that you can find is there's a decline in the immune system functioning. And the best way to be able to be an observer of that is that if you get a cut or a scratch and it doesn't heal as quickly as it usually does, that means that the immune system is having to work overtime and may possibly be compromised. Also, the quality of the skin is something that you can see. A lot of people that have chronic sleep deprivation, their skin actually gets very, very thin and they can bump it and it can actually leave a mark underneath the skin itself. Now, that's a worse scenario case of it, but there are those two different things that you can look at. First and foremost is the healing of the skin itself. Also, if you're finding that you have a predisposition to suddenly get a lot of colds or maybe you have a general overall fatigue, the best thing that you want to do is to go in and start doing some immune system support. The survival of life-threatening issues such as cancer is significantly impacted with people with sleep deprivation. It's kind of a double-edged sword. A lot of the times in chemotherapy, it does impact the chemistry of the body. It does impact the quality of sleep. So it's kind of a catch-22. So if you're dealing with cancer, what you may want to do is to look at some of the alternative choices that you have to be able to improve the removal of the detoxifying of the chemotherapy itself, and then also be able to improve sleep. The chances of developing diabetes increases, as does the tendency for obesity. If you find that you're putting on excessive weight, meaning more than maybe those normal couple pounds on a monthly basis, then what you might want to do is you might want to go in and look at your quality of sleep. First of all, how long, and then your quality. There's a higher predisposition, as I said, for colds and flu. There's an increased tendency for thyroid problems and hypoglycemia. The chances of developing an autoimmune disorder such as fibromyalgia, lupus, chronic fatigue, and RA, rheumatoid arthritis, increase. There's an increased risk of hypertension. One of the things that is sleep deprivation is people get psychologically like a cat on a hot tin roof. They really can't cope with much of anything. When it goes into the physicalness and the hypertension, then it can increase the risk of stroke. But the other thing is that sleep deprivation is one of the fundamental creators. I call it the kind of the common denominator of depression. So depression and sleep deprivation can go hand in hand. So one of the things that you can do is really go in, first of all, how long do you sleep, and then also the quality of sleep, and then what you can do to be able to help your body get what it needs to. So some of the things with we've got the holidays that are coming up that we can really go in and deal with from the sleep standpoint is that take a brief cap nap, no more than 45 minutes in the afternoon, because if you do any longer, you actually go into a deeper state of sleep, and then you wake up groggy. So a 15 to 20 minute kind of relax yourself, go into a light sleep cycle, then what you can do is wake yourself up, and then also it really can affect, help the body in getting the rest that it needs. It actually can help reset that circadian rhythm. In fact, the culture in the United States really doesn't promote doing these short siestas and naps in the afternoon, yet there's a lot of international cultures that'll actually go in and shut down in the afternoon so people can rest, and then that way they can be able to detox and be able to get rid of the stress that's been building up through the day. You sleep in again, as I said, on the weekends in the first part of the show. If your lifestyle has a commute attached to it, then what you can do is maybe do a short, that relaxing sleep cycle, 15, 20 minutes on your way into work and everything. If you find that you sleep less than 4 to 5 hours of sleep, then the cat naps are going to be really important. You can sleep extra on the weekend to catch up a little bit, but it's important to know that you can't catch up on the sleep deprivation that takes place if your weekly cycle is to only get 3 or 4 hours of sleep, or even 5 hours of sleep. It really can't be made up that way. You can catch up slightly to just be able to get rid of what happened the day before, get you for the day that you're going to be dealing with, but not for that catch-up cycle. Prepare for bed by spending 15 minutes or so in a dim light, also in a quiet room. That means turning the computers off, not watching TV. Focus on relaxing the forehead, the eyes, and the mouth, because these are the areas of the face where we carry most of the day's tension. So there's something that I always do and teach a lot of people, is that you just get your body comfortable, close your eyes, and you just use the mantra, relax the forehead, relax the eyes, relax the mouth. And then you repeat it, and then you can actually feel the tension just kind of melting away. Watch your evening intake. You want to be very mindful of the fact to not eat a lot of carbohydrates and also not a lot of protein before you go to bed, because that stimulates the digestive system, and that makes it really easy. Makes it difficult for you to be able to get the quality of sleep because your digestive system is working overtime. Pancreas is for insulin and so forth. Also, what you'll want to do is you'll want to avoid alcohol, caffeine, spicy foods, and sugar is a definite no-no. If you're going to do any of those, they should be done at least 3 to 4 hours prior to going to sleep. And what that does is it not only affects how you go to sleep, but it also affects how long you stay asleep once you finally get there. And then also make yourself go to bed at least 45 minutes to an hour earlier, even if you're not sleepy. Again, don't turn on those distractions, just focus on relaxing. And then what it does is it tells that brain's command center, that hypothalamus, and the pineal gland, circadian rhythm, in order how to reset itself to where you will get on a healthy, normal sleep cycle. All right, let's jump in. Let's do Malika, I think it is, from Florida. Hi, sweetie.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Did I pronounce your name right, honey?
Oh. You did. I was wondering, I'm a student right now, and it's been kind of a stressful semester. and I haven't felt, like, fully, totally well. I've had, like, sinus problems throughout the semester, and I thought it was a sinus infection or maybe allergies. And because of that, I was taking antibiotics a couple times and kept getting yeast infections. So now I'm wondering if I have candida. And a couple days ago, I started that candida diet where you just avoid all sugar and grains and everything. Yes. And I've like kind of had the symptoms that I read that is typical of having a candida die-off, of like feeling pretty bad, like being really tired and fatigued and like muscle weakness and stuff. So I just wanted to know, should I continue on this candida diet, or is something else going on that I'm not aware of?
There's two things, sweetie, is that, yes, you do have candida, and but I can tell you what you're doing with the change of your diet is helping the candida. Whenever we get that yeast imbalance, and if we do antibiotics, they naturally throw that off. But anytime we eat, you know, foods that are going to give us that instant push, that instant energy and stuff, it throws off the digestive system. The minute that candida, that yeast, fungus, bacteria imbalance occurs, it weakens the immune system. And then what it does is then it causes a lot of the fatigue that's associated with candida itself. Candida in your case goes systemic, honey. I can taste it still, a little residue in your mouth. It does settle into your sinus and so forth. And then what occurs is then your immune system can't deal with the sinus infection, digestion because it's trying to deal with what's happening in your lower gut. So in that particular process, there's some things that you can do from the sinus infection, from the sinus itself, is that if you, have you ever used a neti pot, N-E-T-I pot, honey, for cleansing the, okay, good. Why don't you start doing that on a regular basis a couple times a day? That will start changing. You might also want to do some distilled water instead of using tap water. That will help reestablish the pH in the sinus area. That will help with the sinus infection itself. You will want to stop, continue the diet. But one of the things is that you feel like in the diet, you feel like you're low on protein. So you might want to look at how can you get some protein that can help stimulate the body's metabolism, that can help support the immune system. You might also want to look at some high chlorophyll greens. That would be able to help you as well. That's really good. Red, greens, orange, and yellow fruits and vegetables are very good, even though oranges are citric acid, as limes and lemons are. They actually metabolize as alkaline. They work wonderful for reestablishing the pH in the digestive system itself. So those are the things that you could do. As I'd focus on the candida, and I'd focus on supporting the immune system itself. The other thing is that when I go in, it is very stressful. I can pick up, oh my gosh, with a semester. And, you know, I can pick it up with one professor. I mean, there's one professor that's just kind of a lump in your gut, honey. Does that, is that true?
Well, it's a one big project. It's like my senior thesis.
Okay.
And there, yeah.
Good. Yeah. So I just have to go in there energetically and just say this to you is that, you know, you're doing fine on the project. One of the things that feels like is that you can manage the project, honey, but it doesn't feel like you can manage somebody within the project. I get a professor, somebody that seems like they're pushing, not enough, not this, not that. So it's almost like I want you to take a deep breath. And I want you to just go in and say, you know, manage what you can, be a part of the project itself, but also you just can't be held accountable for this one person. And if you can let go of trying to be accountable for that person, for some reason, it feels like then you'll start settling into your skin. That's what I keep picking up. Another thing your body just said, ask her to drink aloe juice.
Okay.
It'll cool your gut. It's alkaline. It can help you tremendously. You might want also, with the distilled water, you might also want to charge it with some love and some patience and some tolerance toward yourself. You really are a perfectionist. I love you to pieces for that. I can relate to that in the school process and everything, but it can be really hard on the digestive system. So look at your candida diet and stay with it, but see if you can modify it a little bit and see if that can help you.
I'm tired. Should I just sleep as much as I feel like I should, like 10 hours?
You should. I mean, you know, because your body, your clock is off because of all the stress, I would take a nap and I would sleep. And I would give your body the chance to at least detox. It's not going to, you know, over the course of time, it'll reset your circadian rhythm. But what you're doing is you're waking up about 3 hours late. No matter what time you wake up, then what's going to happen is 3 hours after you wake up, then everything kicks in gear. So if you can use that nap in the afternoon or the sleep to detox, that's going to help you tremendously with the cortisol and stuff, sweetie.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
All right. My pleasure. Thank you so much. I appreciate you calling. All right. So I'm sorry, Dorothy. I'm running out of time, my love. Please call me back next week. I will remember your name and try to get you on. I want to thank all of you for coming to the show today and trying to look at how can we really use sleep as a natural stress reducer. So please join me again next Wednesday at 10 o'clock a.m. on contacttalkradio.com. Have a wonderful week. Enjoy a week of quality of sleep and be sure to fit it in. I'll see you next week on the radio. Light and love to all of you.
You've been listening to The Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.ritbergere.com. See you soon.